From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
The dream has always been a rainbow of peas. That's what one of today's guests said to me more than a decade ago, and that dream continues to fuel a passion for breeding colorful, edible potted peas at the organically managed, Oregon-based seed company called Peace Seedlings. Ready to think beyond your basic green pods and expand your palette to purple and yellow and even reddish shades, including ones with flowers in gorgeous colors that hummingbirds especially love too? Well, more in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support for Away to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners on the web, colorblends.com, and by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, WhiteFlowerFarm.com.
Today's guests are Delana Capular and Mario Di Benedetto, who founded Peace Seedlings in 2009 after helping Delana's parents, Alan and Linda Capular, with their longtime seed breeding project called Peace Seeds. Delana and Mario have built on the impressive legacy of Alan Capular's decades of organic seed breeding, and I'm so glad to speak with them again today from Corvallis, Oregon, to talk about their continuing work and with colorful peas in particular. How are you both?
Great.
Doing good. Thank you.
Yeah. Busy as a seed season has been revving up this month.
Definitely seed packing season. And here in Oregon, definitely spring always starts early and we're ready to start planting peas and all sorts of other things.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Like much of the country, we're frozen.
Northeast. Yeah. We've had a very mild fall and I mean, we've
winter.
Yeah, and now even the beginning of winter.
I have to say, we hardly had winter, really. So
We were ready just to skip winter and go from fall to spring. But winter did decide to come last week for a few days. We had some low 20s. But nothing that peas can't take. At least we've selected ours. We plant them out early, usually February, sometimes even January. And
wow.
In our climate, we have enough, days or nights in the 40s, days in the upper 40s, lower 50s, that they germinate, come up, and then by the time spring comes, they're ready to jam.
Mm. So the sort of history of peas, it started with your father, I suppose, Delana, yes, like breeding peas. Is some of the oldest sort of genetic material or whatever we want to call it, or some of the oldest varieties, how long ago do you think?
Oh, gosh. My dad started breeding peas in the, probably 90s, maybe actually even 80s. He kind of started playing in the peas. He really was inspired by Mendel and kind of blown away by all his discoveries and intrigue of peas in general, and read a lot about Mendel and which is an old school pea breeder for those that don't know.
Sure, of course.
Most people know, but I thought I'd throw that in there. He also really was kind of put off by all the PVPs and
privatization.
The privatization of a lot of the pea varieties that were available. And so he wanted to make peas that didn't have any strings attached. And so the first pea that he did was Sugary, which is just your classic delicious green vine pea. Very standard, but was a step above the ones that had PVPs. So you could save your own seeds as much as you want.
So it's kind of like the open source idea of seed genetics. So that they were open pollinated / open source. It wasn't, nobody was like patenting them, so to speak.
Yep, you got it.
Yeah.
And then he also really was very quickly was like, well, how do I make a edible purple pea? So he spent a good 20 years trying to make the first of its class of edible purple pea, snap pea. And
because there was purple shelling peas, or there's some old European varieties that were purple shelling peas. So the genetics were out there, but just not an edible potted purple.
Oh, I didn't know that they were, that there was were shelling peas with the purple pod. That's interesting. Huh. Yeah.
So he spent the first decade making the cross in the wrong direction and didn't get anywhere but a bitter pea. And so then he went back and started making the crosses in a different direction and then created Sugar Magnolia, which was of its own kind, a delicious, really tall vine, purple flowered, purple potted snap pea.
That's wonderful. And it's become quite a hit, I think. I mean, other seed companies carry it. I mean, it's become quite a thing. It's people love it, I think, who have seen it and tried it.
Yeah, it's definitely become one of the more distributed pea varieties that he bred probably at this point.
Well, yes. Green Beauty was also a standard, more of a snow pea, but it really developed. And when you let it mature, we kind of call it a snow snap, because when you let it mature, it gets really delicious and amazing and big and plump. And it hands down one of the most amazing peas that he bred, in my opinion, in terms of flavor and versatility. We've gotten a lot of rave reviews about it.
So that's Green Beauty. Now, I believe years ago when we spoke about peas, not on the podcast, but just together, you called them puffer pods. Is that right? Did I make that up? Was that what you called them, puffer pods?
We did use that terminology. Yeah, I mean, it is a unique trait.
Yes.
I mean, shell peas actually do it as well. They sort of puff up if you are paying attention. And a lot of people think that snow peas should be picked flat, which you can. You can pick a snow pea flat. That's fine. But if you let the seeds mature, I mean, just like a snap pea, they're a lot sweeter once they mature. And a lot of snow peas are that way. Some get woodier, but Green Beauty is one of those. You let it fully puff up, fully mature, almost, you know, as fat as a snap pea, but it's a snow pea. And it is the most delicious pea, and has that a unique crunch. That's the thing. The puffer pods have this crunch that's almost, you know, comparable to, you know, a potato chip, or just that satisfying texture in your mouth.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, I love, that's the kind of peas that I like the most, because it's sort of like you're getting the two for one thing. And like you say, it's that textural thing as well as the flavor thing. But it is counterintuitive as you see the pods get to a certain size. If you have never grown one of these snow snaps, I think it's a good term that you've made up for them.
Yep.
If you've never seen one, you're thinking, oh gosh, the pod's going to be all stringy and nasty and woody. And oh, yep. I've let it go too far. It's going to be, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Because not all varieties can do that, can go that far. Yeah. Yeah. So your focus is really edible potted peas, right? Not shelling peas. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much
it. There's one old heirloom that we grow multi-star. That's a bush shell pea that we grow and offer in our seed list, but it's just because it's an awesome variety. And I love to have shell peas in the freezer regardless of.
But all the varieties that we have bred we've focused on edible pods of both snaps, snows, and some that are, yeah, sort of in between.
Right. And the colors, like, so your father, Donna, knew that, Alan knew that there was purple in the genetics of peas in this other, in the shelling peas. And then he worked to try to get that in. You have some that are yellow pods, and you have some that are almost like a, I don't know, like they're blushed or reddish-ish kind of looking.
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff going on. I mean, how does that all happen?
Totally. So the yellow also, he did develop a yellow snap pea that he used Golden Sweetie, which is a snow pea, an old Indian variety, I believe, to make Opal Creek, which is a yellow snap vine. And so that was the yellow that he created. And it's a... Well, I'm going to go off on tendrils for a second, because it's a regular tendril pea, which most people are more familiar with. A regular tendril. It's got a curl with a handful of little curls off of it. Whereas he started breeding hyper tendril peas, we call them, which is more like the best way to call it is a hyper tendril. It's really, it's like 10 tendrils put together or something. So it has the ability to hold on and take care of itself better than most peas. They're a lot easier to trellis, considering most all the peas we have bred so far are vines. they hold onto the trellis a lot better than regular tendril peas, and which is to me like a big deal because I love peas, but definitely if you get some kind of stormy weather in the spring, you can end up with some peas pulling off the trellis if they're right. Regular tendril and hyper tendril. So in a lot of the breeding that we've done, we've continued pushing for more and more hyper tendril peas.
Right. No, it's a great, and the first time I saw it when I grew one of your varieties, I was like, what the heck is, because it's like, really, it's a difference, you know, it's, I don't know if it's like 10 to 1 or whatever, but the little curly QE things, you know, there's more of them and they really do hold on. It's great. It's quite different. The other thing that's different is, you know, a lot of peas that are the sort of brand name, you know, generic ubiquitous pea varieties, some of which are great tasting and so forth, but as you point out, a lot of them are kind of the patented types or whatever. They're not sort of open source. A lot of them have white flowers, and you have a lot that when I grew them, wow, like some of the flowers were just, you know, I thought it was almost like I was growing the floral sweet peas. You know what I mean? It was like they're just beautiful flowers. So that diversity comes in from all over the place, or
that might have been from the purple potted peas, I think, was where that. That's a good question, because yeah, I mean, so Delana's dad, you know, originally did, you know, making the sugar magnolia and the hyper tendril. So those purple genetics, I think one of the parents he used was this purple potted parsley pea, is what they call it. And instead of tendrils, it had leaflets. And it's a very unique, it's a bush pea, a shelling pea.
More of a salad plant is what it was like sent to him. Like some friend sent it to him. Oh, you might be interested in this. This is a really cool salad plant. The tendrils, just like if anyone who doesn't know, pick the top of a pea or the tendril of a pea at the right stage, and they're absolutely delicious.
Like pea shoots, so to speak.
Yeah. Exactly.
Pea greens, pea shoots.
Yep. Pea greens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so fantastic, fantastic, delicious, yeah.
And then really nutritious. I mean, a lot of the
yes.
The other part that my dad was always really inspired by was how can we up the nutrition in regular vegetables that we already grow? And so that's always was part of the inspiration behind purple potted peas was purple potted peas are high anthocyanin. So getting more nutrition in our diet and all the ordinary vegetables that we eat is just going to benefit all of us.
Right.
And so he didn't, I don't think, realize that crossing that parsley pea, they call it, so it had leaflets instead of tendrils, crossing that with a regular tendril was what created the hyper tendril. And so that was just sort of an anomaly and part of the breeding process. When you bring together unique, obscure genetics, sometimes what you hope for is stuff to happen that you didn't even realize. I mean, that's good alchemy, is getting, you know, greater than the sum of the original parts, something new happens. And
right.
So that, you know, there was a lot of, to get his original, he had sugar magnolia, the purple pod, and the Opal Creek, the yellow, and this large green beauty, and a lot of, or at least green beauty and sugar magnolia, those are both purple flowers. So then we had a purple, a green, and a yellow. And so the next thing was, how do we get some of the rest of the rainbow? And it was actually a woman in Europe who had an online blog, and Rebsy was, I think, her last name. And she had this whole thing. And this is when we were first starting in 2008, maybe. And mm-hmm. She had a blog talking about making these bright red peas, and she had pictures of them, and they were totally amazing, super gorgeous, but they weren't edible pods. And so it was like, whoa, that's...
And she was using what led us down that rabbit hole, or my dad found it, and she was using some of my dad's varieties as parents. And so then it lit the fire behind him again of, oh my God, we need to get back into this pea breeding project.
It's
kind of set aside because of all the things that you do in life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So the realization was that to get red, you cross the purple and the yellow. I mean, it seems pretty obvious. So, you know, we finally did that, and that's where we got the ruby color, is that purple over a yellow pod. And that was as close as we had gotten to
So then we have Ruby Beauty, which is a snow vine, and Ruby Crescent, which is a snap of that similar color. And we've pretty much, yeah, it's just a unique color. It's not quite the red that we had originally thought of creating at that moment.
When they're young, they are pretty darn red. As they mature, the purple is more pronounced. So, you know, it's more of a ruby color. We were still excited. And the
way they look in the garden when the sun comes through them is like a work of art. It's like stained glass. It's just really amazing. And they taste delicious. And I feel like bring a new hue, which is pretty fun and amazing.
Mm. So in breeding peas, are you out there like with a paintbrush moving pollen around, or what are you doing? What's the thing?
In breeding peas, not quite with the paintbrush. We use decapitated flower, I guess, as the paintbrush. But
okay. So you're moving, you're taking flowers and touching them to one another.
What a lot of people don't realize is that a pea flower, once it's opened, it's already pollinated.
Yes.
So they're not dependent on pollinators to make pods. They're fine and they're happy with bumblebees, really love them. Pollinators can come.
The hummingbirds love them, as you said, of the purple flower.
But the reality is they've already pollinated themselves. And so you don't get much outbreeding, they call it, because of that. They're pretty self-fertile. Mm-hmm. And so to make a cross, you have to open a flower before it opens, or break apart a flower before it opens and take pollen from a different one that's mature and pollinate that flower. So it is, of all of the breeding, it is very hands-on, meticulous work. To
the first year, if you're lucky, you get 4 or 5 seeds, and then definitely every cross is a very coveted pod. And even the next year, I remember my 3-year-old, when she was little, she went out and just picked some peas. I was like, wait, what are you doing? Because those first couple years are definitely very finite, the number of seeds that you get. Yeah.
Mendel must have been a patient man, huh?
Apparently.
You have no shortage of other legumes. I noticed, I was looking at the list again this week on your website, and you have like 15 kinds of edamame type soybeans, more green beans that I can count. And I mean, favas, and you definitely have a thing for peas and beans, don't you too?
Yeah. I feel like part of it is I grew up vegetarian, and my parents were always really passionate about having a diverse, nutritious diet. And obviously legumes are some of the highest in amino acids, and my dad has always been really passionate about, really, we don't need protein, we need all the amino acids that make up the that nourish us.
Your body breaks proteins down into these free amino acids that's what we use. So just a different way of thinking about nutrition. And
so the legumes are and I'm a vegetarian for probably 50 years already. So, legumes are an important part of that diet. So I get it. I didn't know that was your reasoning. So that's interesting.
I don't think it's like preconceived reasoning, but when you say that, that's what comes to mind is probably the natural reason behind it. I mean, there was also in the Willamette Valley, people weren't growing soybeans. And there was this amazing seed curator, Robert Lobitz, when my dad was part of the Seed Savers Exchange Network. And he had this incredible list of soybeans. So him and my dad became seed allies and, mail order friends, so to say. And he started ordering a lot of his soybeans and testing them, seeing how they grew in the valley. And so then he started accumulating a collection of soybeans that grew really well for us. And I mean, edamame is such a fun crop, so delicious and so easy to like freeze it and stash it. And yet not a lot of people realize how easy it is,
it made me, it was like, Margaret, why aren't you growing these? Because I mean, if I go to a restaurant that has them, that's what I order. You know what I mean? I want a whole big bowl of, I love them and sort of just steamed with a little salt or whatever, and, eat the whole, eat them whole. And so are they easy to grow? Are they like growing peas, or is there some?
They're almost easier to grow. You don't need a trellis. I mean, they're very, They have their plant with a lot of structure. They hold their pods right on the plant. They pretty much, most edamame, they mature all at once. So when you have a mature edamame plant, you can cut the whole plant, take it out into the shade in the summer and strip it all the pods off at once. You know,
I think that, and like any garden plant, you know, it comes down to timing. And this, the edamame are probably one of the later legume that you plant. And
for us, at least, I mean, we have obviously a different season than some people.
Yeah, but they like warmer soils, so it's a little later into spring.
Sure.
To get them to germinate well. I mean, that's really the only trick. Other than that, they're just as easy as any green bean or any other legume.
Well, you have quite the list of those. And, so we have maybe like 5 minutes left, and I just wanted to just, you know, there's all so many things on the list, you know. I always like to pour over your list and see what's on offer.
You
sort of have the sesame grex. tell me what the heck is that?
Yeah, and it's one of the few things we don't use the word grex, but yeah, or maybe we do. We call it shades of sesame.
Shades of sesame. Okay, so it's sort of like, but it's like, yeah.
It is a grex. I mean, we started with white, tan, and black sesame, and we really like Gramacio, we like Za'atar, we like tahini. It's another for a vegetarian, but anyway, I mean, it's a high nutrition, good food. And so we had been sort of motivated to grow our own. And then once you realize,
very subtropical. You have to also realize normally sesame is a subtropical crop.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as Mario was saying, we realized we needed to interbreed them to maybe get them to work well in our climate outside. So, sure, we could grow them in a greenhouse, but we don't really have a lot of greenhouse space, and we prioritize it for things that really need it.
Well, and we wanted to select for hopefully something that people all over the country could be growing that would, yeah, maybe be more adapted to cooler climates.
So now we have this really epic, as we call it, shades of sesame. It's got like gray seeds, and tan seeds, white seeds, and black seeds, all the different mixes of, and it's, we've really made a lot of progress in getting it to grow better and better in our climate, and we can easily pull off a crop. I don't know, I think we grew 10 pounds last year.
Yeah.
Which isn't even that big of an amount of space. It's actually impressive how much you can grow in a generally pretty small space. And what's really cool about sesame is it's a really easy, I mean, I guess I can't really call it a grain because it's not, but it's similar to grains in that certain ways, but the pods just open up. And so when the pods start opening up, you cut it and you let it finish drying, and then you can just shake it out and it just pours out of the pods.
So it doesn't need some kind of big processing.
Exactly.
No. Huh. The term open sesame, it comes from the seed pod.
I didn't know that. That's so funny.
Because, yeah, if you space out, all of a sudden those pods are opening and your sesame is sort of on the ground in your field.
Was one more, in the last minute or two, I just wanted to ask you about one more, which is amaranth, not just for flowers, but for microgreens?
Yeah, microgreens has been an interesting, really popular thing that's happening right now all over.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're at the Saturday market and we have friends there that are doing microgreens, and the red amaranth, the most common one, red garnet. You can see why people grow it. It's neon pink. It looks amazing. You know, it's high nutrition.
Super mild flavor.
Yeah, mild. And so it was just cool to see that as a thing. And obviously the microgreens people, they go through a lot of seeds. So obviously as seed growers, you relate like, okay, these are potential big customer base of people who want microgreens. And so we just saw, we'd been, you know, and happened to be doing a bunch of amaranth breeding and realized, yeah, there was sort of a niche to, so we started selecting for really bright yellow stems, just to add another color spectrum into the microgreen world. So that is one of the things we've been doing with amaranth.
Well, always good stuff from Peace Seedlings. Thank you guys for making time, Delana and Mario, for making time today to talk about it. And now go fill some more seed packets.
Okay. We will.
And I hope I'll talk to you soon again. Thank you.
Thank you, Margaret. Really good to talk.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com and on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Underwriting support for A Way to Garden provided by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, a third-generation bulb company offering top-size flower bulbs directly to landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners. On the web, colorblends.com. And by High Mowing Seeds, Wolcott, Vermont, professional quality vegetable, flower, and herbal seeds that are 100% organic and non-GMO project verified. On the web, highmowingseeds.com. And by White Flower Farm, offering a wide range of carefully selected and expertly grown garden plants. On the web, whiteflowerfarm.com.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com.